I'm here on a job site with Tim, who owns his own electrical contracting business.
3 employees and 2 work trucks.
Tim traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance. We're positively here where he needs us most.
They sure are.
With step-by-step help on all his insurance needs, all for shockingly low rates.
Shockingly low, huh?
Just a little bit of electrician humour. Do you get it?
I got it.
You know, it feels like we have a real connection. All right, I'll stop.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. Get more with Geico.
Marv and Daz's Pubcast with Marvin Bartley and Gordon DL.
Right, Marv, we're sitting here this afternoon having a wee bit of lunch, but the question is, what are we doing here, mate?
I wish I knew. Now, we're here to talk about football journeys. So we're going to start with yours in 1920 and then we'll move on to...
I'll take 1920 if you've honestly. Football journeys, it was that long ago. Things have changed. A lot of things have changed in the game now. My day, Marv, you know, it was all skill and speed. In your day, it was just as rough as you possibly could. Tackles, dodgems. Barring into people, how many bookings you got. It was different in my day.
Could tackle back then, like, couldn't you?
Well, funny enough, you knew that a centre-half had won on you right away. It's incredible that when you think what happens now. You knew, I played centre-forward, and I knew as a centre-forward that the centre-half was got to lay one on me. The minute I held the ball up, he was got to lay one on me, put a marker down. You'd have been brilliant in the old days. You know what I mean? That first tackle without the booking. And you knew it was coming. The referee would just give them a warning. But the rules have changed now. For the good or the bad?
I think it's gone a little bit soft, hasn't it? I think when I was playing, you could still probably get away with the old tackle. But now with VAR, I think I'd have been in massive trouble because everything's pulled up. Everything's looked at 2 or 3 times. Some things that I think aren't even a booking or a sending off now. But obviously to protect the players, the more skillful players like yourself.
Yeah,
me though,
better pace. I always had the pace, Marv. I started as a wide man, believe it or not. They found out I wasn't good enough to play in that position. And then they put me in at centre forward and I became a goal scoring machine.
Where was that? Where did you start?
I started at Rangers. I was an S form, joined 14. And I used to get in, train into town, bus out to Ibrox. And then I walked around the corner every Tuesday and Thursday. And that was me until I 16, and then I left school, and I was very lucky because my father was going to throw me out of the house because I couldn't pay dig money because I left school. And the Sunday, I got a phone call from John Gregg asking me to get in the Monday, and I signed my first professional contract. So I was quite lucky in that sense. But at that time with Rangers, you looked at a club that I was a shirt and tie every day for training.
Really?
Clean shaved. Shirt and tie. The only time you're allowed in the building on a Sunday, if you were injured and you're in for treatment, you could wear casual clothes. But every day you had to go and turn up, suit, shirt and tie.
So that's from like obviously you going as a young boy to the oldest player, and that was for everybody?
Everybody. That was the rules for everybody. You get fined or they wouldn't have let you in. We had somebody at the door and you had to have your tie right up there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It wasn't it was
loose.
Casual. And everybody had to do that. It was a nightmare for me because I was 16, didn't have a lot of money at that time, so I didn't have many suits. So what I done was I bought a dark jacket and about 4 different pair of trousers just to mix and match. But it was so strict in those days, it was unbelievable. I was 15 and I got a phone call, I was S-form 15, I got a phone call to play in the reserves. And it was against Motherwell at Fir Park. Now, I grew up probably 5-minute walk for Fir Park. And I got a phone call saying, look, we need you in tomorrow. You're going to be on the bench for reserves, Rangers reserves at that time, brilliant. And I thought, great, right, okay, we need you in at Ibrox. So I had to go, jump the train, because didn't have a car at that time, jump the train, into town, bus out to Ibrox, walk round the corner, jump the team bus, drive down the M8, buy my house, up into Fir Park, right? And it was brilliant because I lived in the flats at that time.
Yeah.
And Saturday night was always chippy night for us, right? And I was thinking, right, okay, I'll be back down the road, back at 5, walk down the road, get my chippy because no, like a young boy. Anyway, cut long story short, game finished, and I went to walk out the door. And the coach at that time was a guy called Joe Mason. And he says, where do you think you're going? I says, I live 5 minutes down the road, on the bus. This is the discipline that you got on the bus. So we drive down, by my house, and my family are standing in the balcony in the first floor flat, right? There's all flats at the time, and they've got their chippy. And I'm looking up and they're waving, right? And a couple of experienced players for the back were sitting at the tables, and I'm only young at the time. And I remember, I'm not going to name them, turning around saying, I think Sandy Jardine was playing, he was coming back from injury. Hey, Sandy, have a look at these head cases waving on with fidgets. It's my mum, dad. It was my family. And I was sitting there, I couldn't say anything.
Put your head down.
Oh, I was spitting that, couldn't say anything. Gets into Ibrox, true story of this, gets into Ibrox, gets all the kit out, and at that time, the bus driver was Jimmy Bell.
Right.
Right, the great Jimmy Bell, the kit man. And Jimmy lived in Wishaw. And then we got all the kit out, put the kit in, and then we get back on the team bus, and Jimmy dropped me off at the house. So that was the structure on those days. You weren't allowed to just turn up at the ground. You had to go to Ibrox, and every game you had to go back to Ibrox. And that was at 15. So I'd been in, out again, just for one game.
That's just a good thing, though, isn't it? Instills that discipline into you.
Yeah, well, Rangers, that's why they had the shirt and tie. Mm-hmm. That's why they always decided it was all about discipline. In those days, you know, you had strong characters, Jock Wallace, and then John Gregg became the manager. He ended up signing me. And I'm on for there. But I hated it, Murph.
Really?
I hated it, mate. Honestly, I'd left school. I was very, very light at that time.
Yeah.
I was built in speed.
Yeah.
And every time I'd get into training, when we went in to do the weight circuit on a Tuesday afternoon, I couldn't do it.
Yeah. Right?
And we'd done a running session. In those days, Rangers were always, they had this great thing about, in the last 5 minutes, Rangers will score a lot of goals because they're fitter and they'll run all over the top of you. And we'd done a lot of fitness work, a lot of running track, 220s, 150s in those days. You didn't have the sports science now that pull you out. You ran until you were sick and then you had to keep running. And I remember going home after my first week full time, true as I'm sitting here. And on the Monday, I knew that the hard day was coming the Tuesday. So I went up the stair and I got a hammer out and I put my toe and my foot out and I was hammering. This is true, mate. And I was hammering, so I was injured. So I would come
up. So I was calling sick, mate.
So I limped in the next day. And I was like, I don't know what's happened to me. And I had a big bruise. Oh. I physically couldn't do it.
You know to avoid hard work.
Yeah. So that was my journey into football when I was 16. Did you go professional when you
I went pro at, I think I was 20, so like 19 years ago, actually, around this sort of date. So I was kind of going Sunday league. I hated football. Started playing football at the age of like 10 or 11. Had my first team then, and then I grew up in Reading. So I was very lucky to get called up to what was Reading Schoolboys at the time, mm-hmm. which I was year six. So all the best school players from Reading go into one team. So during my first year of football, I got called into that, which was excellent. And then before I knew it, I'd signed for Reading Academy. So I'd gone from hating football, playing Sunday League, to being in an academy within 8 months. And that was probably the worst experience of football that I ever had. Like you're saying, that structure and the discipline and stuff. I just didn't want that. I wanted to play with my mates. It all became too serious. You're playing Arsenal, Chelsea, going up to Manchester to play against United in tournaments and stuff. I just didn't want it. So those probably 2 or 3 years that I had at academy football were terrible for me. And the happiest day I had during the academy is when Phil Parkinson, actually, is the manager at Wrexham. He was just doing his coaching badges. He was the captain of Reading, but he was also coach of my team. And he's like, you know, you're probably going to have a really good career, but we're going to release you. And I was delighted. It just meant honestly. It meant I could go back and play Sunday League with my pals. So the year before, I actually got released, I said to my mum, I don't want to do this anymore. She goes, well, just give it another season, see how it goes. But like I said, I was released at the end of that season, went back to playing Sunday League, which was brilliant for me. And kind of my route into football was, you know, 16, like you say, have to go out and earn money because you have to pay things in the house. So had multiple jobs. You know, got to 19 and I'd worked at Sports Direct. I had, you know, done like door-to-door knocking, trying to sell stuff.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, mate, honestly, absolutely everything. And then I was like fitting windows. That was my last job.
Fitting windows?
Fitting windows, double glazing windows.
So. Can you still do it? Because I'm needing
I'll give you a good rate. Double glazing the conservatories. That was my last job, doing that at 19. I'll never forget it. You know, I was looking at like what was next. Because at this point, I was playing like non-league football, but I'd been released from, I don't even know what the equivalent, West of Scotland teams. You know, between the ages of 16 and 19, I've been released by so many different teams. And I was like, do you know what? I'm enjoying playing football. What's to be will be. Never thought I'd go professional at that point because I said I was getting released by village teams. So I actually trained to be a prison officer. So honestly, mate, yeah. So my mum was like, she sat me down. She's like, what do you want to do? I said, someone that's got a good pension in it. You know, something that you can move up the ladder whilst doing. I didn't want to work in an office. Mm-hmm. My brothers have both been to university and they have really good jobs now, like office-based jobs. I didn't want to do that. So I went and did all the training. And then I was at a team called Hampton and Richmond. And we'd just been promoted. So, you know, Martin Allen had given me a course going on trial at MK Dons. So I was like, right, fantastic. I got this trial opportunity. Went into MK Dons. And it was just at that time, Martin Allen went from MK Dons to Leicester. So I've been at MK Dons, did a week. He said, right, we're going to sign you. He said, like, just give me till next week. I'll get everything sorted with the chairman. Going to bring you in. So I'm going home, told my family. And on that, I think it was like the Saturday or the Sunday, he'd been then confirmed as a Leicester manager. So I was like, oh my God, what's going on here? Didn't hear from him. I had an agent at the time. Was calling him, what's going on? What's going on? Heard absolutely nothing. So I went on my holidays. I went over to Zante. For a week with the lads.
did you think you were going back to the prison officers?
Well, at that point, I was still waiting to be placed. So I was coming back to do, you know, the double glazing stuff. Got back from there, doing my double glazing stuff, waiting to be placed into a prison. Got a call from Bournemouth to come on trial. So I was like, brilliant. At this point, it was Kevin Bond. So we had Kevin Bond, who was Harry Redknapp's assistant for a little while.
I played with Kevin.
Did you?
I played with Kevin at Man City. Yeah. Loved his shell, Kevin.
Oh, man, like, had the hair and that. Like, we should be running these. Oh, yeah. Bondy, mate, man, brilliant mate. Guy. So we had him. He was a manager. Never forget, had the trial for a week. Played against Weymouth and Southampton. And I got cramp after like 25 minutes against Weymouth because it was a Tuesday night game. So I'd worked all day. Like, had something to eat quickly in the car, driven down to Weymouth, which is about 2 hours from me, started the game, got cramped, and I was like, oh no, this is the end of my trial. They're never going to have me in for another day. And then Bonnie said to me after, no, like, I know you got cramped, probably a little bit of nerves, et cetera. We'll get you back in for Saturday's game, which was Southampton. So again, trained, I think, one more day, because I couldn't get all the days off work. So I had one day off work that I took, I think it was a Thursday. We were off the Wednesday, and then the Friday I was back at work, came down on the Saturday to play, and got cramped again during that, and I was just like, this isn't done, mate. Like, you know what I mean? I've got no chance of getting signed. Yeah. No chance of getting signed. So he said, right, I'll have a word with you after the match anyway when I came off. And he took me to the office and said, we're going to offer you a contract. And like, genuinely, I could not believe it. I was like, right.
You got that in person?
Yeah, exactly. They're clearly skint, just trying to get bodies in. And yeah, that was kind of it for me. Signed the contract. Remember going home, called my mum on the way home. Actually got in the car, called my mum. And she was just absolutely delighted because from her point of view, single parent, you know, two of my brothers have gone through university that she managed to put through. And then now I've got a professional contract. So she's probably thinking, right, like my job's kind of done with these lot. So she was in floods of tears, obviously got home, absolutely delighted. And then, yeah, went on pre-season tour. Maybe went to Bath or somewhere like that. But we had some really good players though. Darren Anderton was there.
Yeah.
He was at the end. Warren Cummins, who started up here, was there. Yeah, like Brett Pittman. Boys have gone on to have like really, really good careers as well. So that's my kind of my journey into it. So it was either a prison officer, luckily I got to be a professional.
So
footballer.
You were a late developer then at 20?
Yeah.
But when you look at, you go back and you look at your career, and the one thing I've always been very blessed with, and I always think about it, because it happened to me midway into my career. When you go and you look at these guys who work 8 hours a day, and then they go and train, they go and play, the dedication is brilliant. I went right into full-time football.
Yeah.
And you went in there, you start at 10:30, you finished at 12 o'clock, and you still moaned.
About to say that, I couldn't get my head around. Yeah. Always moaning about the double sessions.
Yeah, double sessions. Oh, I used to hate a double session. Off. Get the hammer out. And when you look back at that, you think, oh, you got a cheek.
Yeah.
Tomorrow. And it's not until I went through a wee blip in my career that I had to go and work. Mm-hmm. And mate,
I just couldn't handle it.
Did it refocus you?
It gave me the desire to get back to where I wanted. It changed my life a little bit.
Yeah.
But I had to go through that before I realised how privileged I was.
Yeah.
And you would have, you know, if you didn't get the day off, you'd be going, oh, I can't believe we're not getting a day off. Or you were in after a game, you know, maybe a Tuesday night, you were in the Wednesday. You used to moan like hell.
Yeah.
But, and that was when you're 16, 17, and you were trying to work your way up the ladder. And then you realise that there's guys out there that are digging holes in roads and they're having to work 12 hours a day. And
go training after that as well.
And go. The part-time boys, I take my hat off
100%.
To because it is the hardest thing in the world today. But I was very fortunate. As I say, I got that break at 16. And I just, for the first year, it was... I think you'd have been looking after me in the prison. Absolutely. I hated the players.
Yeah.
Because you were a young player. In those days, it was hard. For instance, I couldn't drive, so I stayed in Motherwell. And I travelled. At that time, I lived next to Davy Cooper.
Right.
Late, great Davy Cooper. Davy was brilliant. And Davy, obviously, was in the first team with... And he would travel with Tom Forsyth and Tom McLean, two brilliant Rangers players. So I was very fortunate that I could travel with them.
Yeah.
But in the early signs of travelling with them to get into training, Cook couldn't drive either. So we'd get Cooper would get a taxi over to Hamilton. We'd wait for him coming off the motorway. And I remember my first day, and this is why I hate it, full-time football. Big Tom Forsyth, he was... horrendous. Comes off the motorway, stops. Coop jumps in the back seat. Wee Tom's in the front seat. And the window goes down. And the door's locked. And Big Tom says to me, now remember, I have to be in for 9:30. That was the discipline. Because you had to clean the boots.
Yeah, yeah.
So Big Tom would say to me, any sweeties? I'd be like, no, no sweeties. No bonbons. I says, no. Literally put the window up and drove away.
Wow.
Right, and I'm standing there and I'm thinking, how's he going to get back for me?
Yeah.
He's not going to do a new turn in the motorway.
How does this joke play out, yeah?
Yeah, and they'd just leave you. And I had to run up to Hamilton train station as a young kid, jump the train into Glasgow, and I would be late and they'd be going off their head, because in those days, when you were a young player, you cleaned the boots.
Yeah, yeah.
And people don't believe us, but on a Saturday, Rangers were on the telly, which they were most Saturdays, and it was different TV time.
Yeah.
As a young kid, you had to go and paint the stripes and the boots for the advertising, so that so if you would clean
out.
their boots, and then you get the white paint, because it used to be Adidas sponsor, and you would paint the three stripes and then paint the other three stripes, mate. And you weren't allowed to leave until that was all done. And at the beginning, you're thinking full-time, glamorous, and everything about it. Oh, I detested the first year. And then when the other batch of kids come in, you started.
Yeah.
You've done it.
You look in the door, any bum-bums, no?
Oh, I've done that before. But that was the beginning, and people would say, oh, great, you play with Rangers. And all you wanted to do was probably get in the first team.
Yeah.
And I always remember walking down the street with these guys and everybody recognised them and stuff like that. And the one thing I always wanted to do in my playing career was I always wanted to play in a Rangers Celtic game.
Yeah.
Because it's the biggest game for me.
Yeah.
I think it's the biggest game in the world.
Yeah.
And especially in those days, because remember, it wasn't all-seaters, it was standing.
Yeah.
So you would go to Celtic Park, for instance, the crowd would be... say 50,000, but there were about 70,000-80,000 people in
there. Yeah, of course.
They were crammed in.
And
the atmosphere and everything was incredible. And I always thought to myself, I just want to play in one of these games.
Yeah.
That's my thing. I want to play in one of these games. But I want to see what it's like to play in that. But I had a massive problem. I used to be sick before every game, my nerves.
Wow.
Every game.
Throughout your career?
Throughout my career. Every game, it was horrendous. And you get to a stage where you go, you knew it was coming.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? See, the minute it got to 2:30, you start to think, oh, no.
Yeah.
And then you were worried about, oh, I've been sitting the pitch and everything.
What was the worry? Just how the game's going to go?
Yeah. How you're going to play, and you were going out there in front of big crowds, and you were a massive club. And then even it carried on through my career, went to Man City. And
yeah.
No matter where I went, I just had this thing that... And then I had to try and work my schedule in that I didn't eat too much.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
You know what like it is? The energy then.
Yeah, yeah.
By the time you get back and forth. So my first few years in full-time was difficult. But
yeah.
When you look back now, not many people get a chance to play with clubs like Rangers and Celtic and clubs like that. And not many people get the privilege to be a full-time footballer,
yeah,
which is brilliant. But it was hard times in the training. Oh, mates, we used to go to Gullin Sands, and the first time I went there, and it was John Gregg, and Rangers were famous for a hill called Murder Hill, right?
It was just
a hill like that, and obviously sand dunes,
yeah, yeah.
Right? So we'd do wee bits of training. And this is the difference nowadays. We just ran and ran and ran and ran. Coop was brilliant with me. David Coop was great with me. And he would say to me, save your energy. We'll still murder hell to do. Because you know what like is,
yeah,
you're enthusiastic.
Yeah, you're going, yeah, exactly.
Oh,
you're
crazy, right? And all you can hear is the experienced players saying, still running so fast.
Yeah,
and
you're
So he'd say, save your energy, murder hell. And people would know that Rangers were there.
Yeah.
So they'd come, they'd put their picnics down, and they sit at the top of Murder Hill.
Yeah.
And the last run was, you would go down the hill, you would come up halfway, there was two poles, you go around the pole, down the hill again, and then it was a full run up. That was your last run. And I remember Coop says to me, just let yourself fall down the hill.
Yeah.
Go up halfway, he says, and then when you get to the bottom, remember, you're finished when
you
get to the top.
Yeah, you're going all the
way through. So down went halfway, I was struggling. Because what you done was you went in the footsteps.
Yeah, yeah. Right?
Sandy Jarre and Alec Miller always went to the front, we Alec McDonald and guys like that. So you try and follow their footsteps,
yeah.
So you weren't again in soft sand. Down, up, round again. Mate, I got to the bottom and it was like somebody had pressed my belly button, my legs fell off. Right? They just completely fell. And I looked and I thought, I can't do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I can't get right? up there.
Do you know that I had to crawl up, literally crawl up?
Wow.
Right, and there was people sitting at the top with egg sandwiches, know how you can smell
yeah,
an egg.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, sorry,
I'm not kidding you on. And do you know, I used to, 3 months before pre-season, I used to couldn't sleep at night thinking about getting back. I'm going to get back there. I'm going, oh no, I need to get the hammer out again. it was fright. People don't understand the modern day football, the days that we had was incredible because it was all about fitness.
Yeah, yeah,
it was all
course.
About running. It was all about strength. And at 16, when you leave school, it's a real eye-opener.
Yeah, yeah. How's my game, running?
Yeah.
So I was super fit. So pre-season was fine for me. There's normally other boys that were struggling. I remember being at Burnley. So I'd signed from Bournemouth to Burnley. And Graham Alexander was there. He obviously came up to manage Motherwell, who's down at Bradford now. And he was towards the end of his career, but he was fit as anything. So it got to like, we were doing the yo-yo test, it was called. So he doesn't mind me saying it now. He's retired. So we're all back for pre-season and we start to run. And I see Charlie Austin probably about 4 or 5 runs in, cutting corners already, like in terms of not making the line. That's the first thing you look for, somebody struggling. So he's doing that. And then always said to ourselves, right, just stay in, beat the goalkeepers and see what happens from there.
Yeah.
But Charlie,
you had to beat the goalies.
Yeah, of course. We had big Brian Jensen, a massive guy at this point. So Charlie's really struggling. I'm like, he's in trouble. Then he just blows up and stops. So that was him out. So I was like, right, just keep going. Had my head down. I'll never forget, I was next to Lee Grant, who's obviously a goalkeeper now, manager at Huddersfield. So I'm next to Lee Grant and my head's down and I'm thinking, we've been in this for a while, but he's still going. So I've looked up and there's like 4 of us left. Graham Alexander, Lee Grant, myself, and I can't remember who the 4th person was. So I'm like, hang on a minute, I'm beating this goalkeeper. And he was athletic, by the way. Guy was in brilliant shape. So he carried on running and it ended up being me and Grezza at the end. So obviously you've got the old school boys who are probably wanting Grezza to win because, you know, like Tomo was there, Big Chris, Ulumu and stuff. And then the younger boys, like, you know, Charlie was my mate. And so me and him were going at it. And the gaffer's obviously cheering and everyone's cheering. And it just got to a point where the gaffer said, stop. Just stop, because I think we're both willing to die. Because I wasn't going to stop.
Did they stop?
Honestly, at this point, he was like 35, maybe 36. So I'm thinking, unbelievable from him how fit he actually was during his career to keep doing that. So, yeah, running was kind of my thing. So there wasn't really a great struggle when it came to runs.
So it's not, the yo-yo's just up and down, up and down.
It's like the bleep test, but it goes up quicker.
Yeah, the bleep test.
The bleep test, yeah.
Oh, I hated the bleep test.
The last time I did a bleep test was when I was trained to be a prison officer because you had to get to like level 5.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah. People were just like,
I could be a level 5 today, not for the hip replacement.
So you had to be to do that. So yeah, that was probably, running was my thing. So that was all right. You spoke about clubs that you played for there. So obviously you've had transfers from one club to another. What was the hardest one in your career? Whether it was a club wanting you out and you didn't want to go, or you've almost had to like manipulate the move for yourself. What was the hardest one for you to make?
Well, my first one was Rangers to Man City. Mm-hmm. Jock Wallace came in and we just lost to Aberdeen for a second year in a row in the Scottish Cup final. The one member, I think Fergie, came on the pitch and was going crazy at his players because it's standard, it's well documented. Aberdeen were a good side at that time, real good side at that time. And they'd won they'd beat us in the Scottish Cup final the year prior, and then they beat us in that Scottish Cup, and Greggy left, and Jock came in. And I remember him, he pulled me in, he says, look, Billy McNeil wants to sign you at Man City. He says, why don't you travel down, have a talk, but don't sign anything until I speak to you. He says, there's still an opportunity here for you, but go and speak to them. But you know then that, you know that they're wanting you out the door, you know. So I went down there and I spoke to Billy and I couldn't believe the money, mate.
Yeah.
Right. But my fault was I went into football for probably money and women.
Yeah.
I've been married, divorced 3 times and I've no money left. So I've had a good career.
I've been fun with it.
I've had a good career. And the worst it was, they sent someone to pick me up at Manchester Airport and it was the girl that worked and she had the title Miss Man City or something. I thought, this hasn't got to go well for me. This hasn't happened. And I remember getting in and the money that they threw at you at that time. And remember, I started off, I think my first wage when I went 16, and you know, the average wage was very poor at that time. I think my first wage was £140 the reserves.
Yeah.
And I think it was about 300 odds in the first team at that time. But that was in 1979.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was good money. So he cut all that down to work that one out. I was in 140 quid. I was in 140 quid. I wasn't in the first team.
Take out tenner for the chippy as
exactly.
Well.
Tenner ding money, mate. It was brilliant. Your mum gave you all the thing back with the toothpaste and the razor. But I went down it, and the money they Billy McNeil was sitting talking to me and she's right. And I didn't have an agent at that time.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I think it was a lot different. But the money Billy was sitting saying, right, this is your wages. We've got to pay this for a house for you. We've got to do that. This is appearance money. And I'm sitting thinking, I'm a multi-millionaire. And I'm thinking as well, I'll impress her out there.
Miss Man City, look what I got.
I'll be Mr. Man City. And it was unreal. And I remember sitting looking, thinking, any chance you phoning Jock? Did I get here? And it was probably the, like, it was a great experience, but it was probably the worst move that I ever had, because Big Billy always says to me, right, you're a young boy, don't go back up to Scotland. If you keep getting homesick, you back up to Scotland, never got to work out for you, and stay out of the city.
Yeah.
Right. No, I never
listened to either of those two things.
I really didn't take that advice on board. I was never out of Scotland. I was never out of the only place I was never was the Man City training ground. And that was a sort of a, that was a transfer for me that was based on no a career.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, know how you look at clubs, you look at managers. Mm-hmm. To play under John Gregg, Jock Wallace, Billy McNeil.
Yeah.
Bertie Auld, for instance, when, you know, great, great players, Lisbon Lions, Jock Wallace, Greggy, statue outside. You know, you can look back in that, but I didn't have an agent. I didn't really have the advice that I needed because you went for the money.
Yeah, yeah.
As a young boy that grew up in the flats at Motherwell, and you're getting handed this money. For instance, I remember they says to me, right, you need to go for your car. And we were sponsored by Saab. And I went down to the garage early because I thought to myself, right, what I'll do is I'll go to the courtyard and I'll try and look at a car that's maybe get 5,000 miles out of life.
So, yeah.
So I remember getting down and I'm in the courtyard and I could see people and I'm sneaking about and I see this beautiful one, blue, two-year-old. Right, and I opened the door and looking in. I'm thinking, oh, that's okay for me. So the boy comes out and he says, oh, Gordon, lovely to meet you. You here for your car? I says, yeah. I says, oh, love that. Look at that. Cut the furry dice on. I'm writing a business. A wee air freshener. A Strathclyde Park, here I come. So he went, ah, it's a nice car. It's done 7,000-8,000 mile or something, he says, and I went, oh, I'm not getting that. Right. So he walks in, they went, right, what are we looking at here? I says, then what are you talking about? He says, pick your car, the showroom. And I thought, you're kidding me on. And he went, no, pick your car, we'll have it ready in 3 or 4 days for you. And that was, so when I look at that, and then I was living next to guys like Bobby Charlton and Fergie and all these guys and whatever. And as I say, I came from one world to a different one. Because when I walked in to sign with Man City, Dennis Law was sitting. And I remember Dennis Law turning around and speaking to me in first name terms. And I'm looking thinking, this is Dennis Law.
Yeah, yeah.
The only time I've ever seen news on the telly.
Yeah.
Right.
How do you know my name?
Exactly. Isn't it? Did you ever get it?
Yeah.
Right. Oh, I had to see no me. And eventually, because of the money, because of everything, know that I would have probably left Rangers anyway.
Yeah.
But I moved because of the financial side of it, not for the football side of it.
Yeah.
And it ended up costing me, when I look back at it, no the manager, no the club, no, I don't blame him, I blame myself because of the situation I got myself in. I've made that decision because financially. Mm-hmm. And if I sort of a put my career back, if I could live it again, I would probably look at other things. What about you?
What's you think you could turn that down though? Just even looking back, like you say, those financial differences, because what you're saying is very similar kind of to my upbringing and when I went from Bournemouth to Burnley. Mm-hmm. And the finances, you know, it didn't work out for me at Burnley, probably not the way I wanted it to. Mm-hmm. But there is no way financially I could turn that down.
Yeah,
that's impossible.
But the moral of the story was I ended up skinned.
We had a good time in between.
Oh, by the way, I'll tell you what, Manchester still remember me. you think the Gallagher brothers are. I understand what you're saying, but for a football point of view now, career-wise, forget the financial side, the career-wise, I'd have probably looked at going a different route.
Yeah.
So your first one, Bournemouth to Burnley?
Yeah, so I was at Bournemouth. I was there for 3.5 years, I think it was. And, you know, we'd gone for, like, say, Kevin Bond and a few other managers, and Eddie Howe became the manager. And then he was getting linked to Southampton, to Crystal Palace. He turned those two down, and then he eventually went to Burnley, who'd just been relegated from the Premier League. So say he went in the October, you know, always got to January window, and then he wanted me to come and join him at Burnley. So I probably knew that for, you know, from maybe the 1st or 2nd of January that this was going to happen at some point, but it carried on until right at the end of the window. And I was the same as you. I had an agent, but he wasn't really that interested in me. So I was doing everything myself at this point. I'll never forget it. You know, Eddie then left, and then the bids that came in, the club were rejecting it. And I was like, right, okay. But at this point, I knew the terms that I was going to get at Burnley. Mm. So I've gone in to speak to the chairman at this point and say, like, what's the situation here? You know, the club have paid nothing for me. You know, how can we make this work? And he's like, right, we don't want to lose you. We're in a really good position at this moment in time. Keep you to the end of the season. And I'll give you, I think you'll say, an extra, like, £700 a week, whatever it was. Now, that's not, I know people at home might be like, oh, that's a decent amount of money, but not compared to what I was going to go and get at Burnley. So this, I was like, No, I want to go. You know, he said, what do you want to? I said, well, I want to go. You know, if you can make it happen, I do want to go. The worst case scenario, obviously, I'll take the extra 700 quid if I have to and then stay to the end of the season and whatever else. He's like, right, that's fine. He said, right, let me keep negotiating with them and we'll see where we get to. This is maybe 3 or 4 days before the window closed. So, as I said, it got closer and closer and closer till it was deadline day. So I've gone to train on deadline day. Lee Bradbury was a manager at this point and he's like, don't think it's going to happen. Get you the new contract, but I'll let you leave in the summer. So my head at this point was like, I was like, right, that's fine. It is what it is. Obviously, Eddie had said to me, what we will do is we'll try and get you on loan. Because what used to happen is a window used to close at the end of January. Then you had a week. Then it was a loan window would open. You could loan players at the end of the season. Mm. So I said, well, maybe we'll renegotiate then. And then literally, I think it got to about, the window closed at 11. I think it must have got to about 5 o'clock. And at this point, Burnley had a plane for me to go from Bournemouth Airport up to Manchester, but all this had been cancelled now because it said it wasn't going to happen. And it got
a private jet.
Well, I don't know if it's I don't know. Well, maybe it's the last flight.
See
I don't know.
See for a podcast.
Yeah. Private jet.
Yeah. I just see it.
So at this point, it's all right. That's not going to happen. And as I sit here, the chairman called me at 5:15 and said to me, "We've accepted a bid. But you know you're not going to get there because obviously the plane's been cancelled or the flight had gone, whatever it was. So I'm sitting there, I'm thinking I need to get from Bournemouth to Manchester, which is easily 5 hours on a good day. You're thinking about trying to go through rush hour traffic and all this. So as soon as he said that to me, the phone was hung up and I was straight in my car. So literally...
You drove?
Ran out of my house into my car and I got in my car, called my brother... Because obviously I knew what was going on. I said to my brother, right, the bid's been accepted, but I need to now get to Burnley. So my brother's like, right, meet me at the, whatever the services were. And he would leave his car there, jump in my car, and he would drive. So I'm driving up from Bournemouth, and I still remember it like to this day. Got to meet my brother in the car. Basically, we had 4.5 hours to go. It was 4 hours and 15 minutes, a window closed. So my brother's like, don't worry, we'll make it. I'm sitting there thinking... We need to make this now. We need to make it. So anyway,
I'll pay this people.
Yeah, exactly that. So he put his foot down. Somehow we got there. I think it was about 5 to 11 or whatever it was. And we jumped out of the car. No medical, nothing. Straight into the office. So the gaffer and Tyndall have met me downstairs. We ran from the car park. My brother dropped me straight up into the office, signed my contract. But back then it had to go by fax.
Yeah.
So Pauline, I'll never forget her. Pauline was the secretary at the time. So, right, just sign it. I'm not even checking the contract. So I'm just signing
things.
Yeah, exactly. I'm just signing things, trusting in Ed that it's been done the way it should have been done.
Yeah.
Sign it. So Pauline's gone to put it in. I'm just sitting there and it's like, say, 1 minute to 11. Literally, I'm like, oh my God, that's done. And she's come back into the room and she's like, oh, Ed can have a word. So I'm sitting there thinking, why is she on the word of the manager? Like, I've signed here, like champagne's been popped in my mind. I've got a big night out with the lads plan, signing on feet, getting a new car, all this. So he's coming back in about 5 past, said, oh, the fax machine's jammed. So I'm like, what? He said, yeah, so it's not gone in, the fax machine's jammed, but what Pauline's saying is it prints off a report saying you've tried to send a fax, and she'll print that off and send it to the FA the next day. So don't worry about it, get yourself into the hotel where we booked you. And we'll update you tomorrow because they were travelling to play Nottingham Forest. So they were training in the morning and travelling to Nottingham to play Forest in the evening. So I was like, right, okay, that's fine. So go back to the hotel. My brother's obviously with me. He's then got a taxi from there to the airport to fly back down south. He left me in my car. So it's got to about midday and I've still not heard anything. And I'm sitting there thinking, this is not going right. No. And then Bournemouth called me and said, you've been fined 2 weeks' wages. So I'm like, what for? I said, well, you're not showing up to training. I'm like, yeah. And basically, you know what's been going on. I'm trying to get this move done, etc. It's like, we don't care. 2 weeks' wages. Get yourself back down. You have to be in training tomorrow. So I'm thinking, oh my, not only has my transfer not gone through, I've now lost 2 weeks' wages. Not got a £700 bump either. So I'm just
my
like,
payroll money.
Yeah, exactly. I'm actually running at a loss here. I'll never forget, I was driving back and then Pauline calls me and says, oh, that's it done. I was like, what do you mean that's it done? She goes, it's gone through. They've accepted that you tried to do it, etc. And I just, please, I'd never, oh, so
please
happy.
Tell me you phoned Bournemouth and said, stick your tail.
Do you know what? I actually did the opposite. I called the gaffer at that point. So I played with Bradders.
Yeah.
I said, Bradders, I just had the call, mate. It's gone through. Because it wasn't him who fined me, it was a board. So I was like, listen, it's gone through, like, thank you for everything, et cetera, et cetera. I said, I'm going to come down and get my stuff. Don't mind it. I'll pop in and see the boys, blah, blah, blah. And he was fine with it. So, you know, I got back, like, bought my brother a present because without him, I'd have never got there. And how he's not been, you know, lost his license because we were speeding through everything at that point, even though it was all in my car. So it was brilliant for me. But then, you know, the club, Bournemouth, then a couple of days later, did an article saying I refused to play and said that I was never going to play for the club again.
Was that?
And yeah, it went a little bit sour as well, like in terms of me with them. But the fans were almost so like, you know, we gave this guy an opportunity. And I came out and said, listen, that never, ever happened. Yeah. Yes, I wanted to go. Yes, I was getting, for me, life-changing money for me and my immediate family. But I never, ever refused to play for the football club. But yeah, that transfer for me was brilliant.
So when you started your career, Marv, I had a couple of positions. I started as a winger.
Were football you always, positions?
Yeah, winger and centre forward.
Oh, I thought you meant Miss Manchester. Oh.
Well, that was a full starting 11 plus two subs. Were you always a midfield player, a sitting midfield player type?
No, I was a striker.
A striker?
Centre forward, yeah. I used to be rapid back in the day. I used to be able to, like, that was my thing, like sprinting before football, like, was what I used to love doing. So couldn't finish. Could not finish. As you can see, going through my career, 10 goals. Couldn't finish, but I started up front. As I said, when I played for that first, the first team I played for, went on a Reading schoolboys trial. They moved me to centre half. I played centre half probably for 4 or 5 years. So in Reading Academy, I was a centre half.
Do you think that was because your height and strength?
Yeah.
Because that's what normal.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
it is. Even at that point, though, I was small. I was tiny.
Oh, what is?
Yeah, really, really small. But I was really quick. So that's also centre half, or you could potentially go to a fullback if you don't grow. But yeah, so couldn't finish up front. Played centre half. And I just hated playing centre half. And then I went into probably 16 to 18. I was like, I don't play centre back anymore. I don't care what level of football I play at. I just want to play the position I enjoy. Which then was sent in the midfield. And then, yeah, I kind of never looked back from there. But if I could have my day again, I'd want to be a striker. Strikers get everything, don't they? Get all the money, all the glory.
But you got to be able to finish.
Yeah, that's my biggest problem.
That's the downside, yeah. And that's where, I must admit, that's why I hated being... The only thing I hated being a striker, right, you're right. As a centre-forward, you could play for 89 minutes, no touch a ball, score a goal, you got all the headlines, you got all the praise, you got all the pats in the back. But I always thought the pressure at the beginning of the season, because I always put a lot of pressure on myself as a striker, because I would always have targets to go, right, say, for instance, I remember when I went to the 8th and I ended up in the Championship, I think I scored 35 goals one season. And the following season started, and after about 4 games, I hadn't scored a goal, and I couldn't sleep.
Really?
Yeah, and I didn't want to take part in any build-ups or link-up plays, because all I was thinking about is, I need to get in the box, I need to score a goal.
Yeah.
And eventually, it's amazing what players will do, I eventually went into the manager and I said, I don't want to be number 10, I want to wear number 8, I want to change my jersey. And he looked at me and he went, what? I says, I want to wear number 8. I don't want to wear number 10. He says, well, if it makes you feel better, go and wear number 8.
Yeah.
And I scored 2 that day. And I ended up scoring 33 that year.
Wow. You know, what was the change? Just the pressure of wearing that number 10, everyone's all eyes are on you, basically, to score?
No, it was just a thought. It's like, I've done this throughout my career. See if I was in a good run, I would wear the same clothes.
Yeah.
Everything would, the routine would be exactly the same.
Yeah, yeah.
See, when I went on a bad run, I always thought, I need to change something.
Change it, yeah, yeah.
It's amazing. And I bet the players, I've been in dressing rooms with players, a lot of them have got this sort of a, you know, this superstition.
Yeah.
And there's no doubt about it. So I decided to change my jersey to number 8, and I wore number 8 for the rest of my career when I was at Raith Rovers, and I ended up top goal scorer every year in 9-10 years.
So imagine that was like 1 to 11 back then. That's when you didn't have squad numbers, wasn't it? 1 to 11.
You didn't have squad numbers. Listen, I played in the days when you only had 2 subs.
Wow.
Yeah, and if you were in the register, you were called Newman. The amount of new mans that come on. Do you not know that?
No.
Right, number 12 and number 14. And coming on for Rangers today is Newman.
So, I was about to try this today then. You were a new man of yesterday.
New man, yeah. That's,
I never knew that.
And you only had two subs.
Wow.
In those days. But I started off as a winger when I went to Rangers. And the only thing I had in my locker was it's one of Lightning.
Yeah.
I mean, Lightning. And I would play, and I started all my youth career, my boys' club and everything as a wide player. I played wide. And I don't know why they decided one day, because I always thought I was a decent, because in those days, you would hit the ball by.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
You'd just hit the ball by the fullback and run.
Yeah, just right?
And 9 out of 10, you're beating him.
Yeah.
Right, unless he's Lightning. Because they didn't have the tactical come out and throw you inside.
Just the race.
Exactly. You could have had a pair of spikes on the back. Away you went. And I don't know. I can't even remember the first game. Must have been the reserves. It must have moved me into the centre forward position.
Yeah.
And I played there the rest of my career. But I remember when I was at Man City playing the reserves and they played me in the middle of the park and I loved it.
Yeah.
The only thing I didn't like about it was there was a lot of running involved. You know, because you had the support of front men, you did in defend and all this kind of. I loved when you were on the ball.
Yeah.
But I didn't like the running side of it and the physical side of it. But I moved into centre forward and I built my career out there, but I always put pressure on myself. See, if I went two or three games without scoring goals, I always started worrying.
Probably a good thing though as well, isn't it? I mean, some people say, oh no, you should remain relaxed and level-headed throughout it all, but maybe if you didn't put that pressure on yourself, then you know you could have gone on a longer barren run than you did.
That's how I felt. And he's probably a bit different now, but that's how I felt a wee bit for Shanklin last year.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at Shanklin, 30-odd goals and player a year in Scotland, and then he gets put into this number 10 role.
Yeah.
And people are saying, it's a one-season wonder because he's not scoring goals, but he's asked to play a different position. And then when you're not scoring any goals, for me, could be totally wrong for Shanklin, but for me, I always used to go, you're judged on your goals.
Yeah.
You've got to score goals. And I was fortunate that throughout my career, I could get a couple of goals here and there. I was a decent enough finisher, but I was instinct. I was a box player. Do you know I very seldom scored a goal for outside the box? I couldn't
really,
kick it that far.
Just in the box?
Couldn't kick it that far.
Yeah.
I couldn't. You know how you used to have a competition at training halfway to maybe hit the crossbar?
Yeah, yeah.
Mate, that's a par three for me. I'd need to lay up.
You and me both, man. I've got your curly toe.
There's no chance in the world I could have hit that to the crossbar. Absolutely no chance.
You think the pressure would have been even more for you now, like the modern day with the social media and stuff? How do you think that would have affected your career?
Nowadays, I find it very hard because you'll hear managers, you'll hear players saying, I don't pay much attention. Mm. They do.
Yeah, yeah, it's impossible not to. Exactly.
It's out there. And plus the fact nowadays, because social media, because of TV coverage, because of everything, you're more recognised in the street as well. You know, so you're getting it everywhere if you're going through a bad time. And you know, I like supporters. There's some supporters, you know, they'll criticise you or whatever it may be. Yeah, I think maybe I would struggle.
Yeah.
I would struggle. I'm a sort of person that nowadays, because I've got to an age, I don't bother that much.
Yeah.
But you still don't like, nobody likes criticism.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
But nowadays, I think if I went 4 or 5 games and then I would say Twitter or X, as it's called, and these Instagrams and everything like that, you go and you're getting criticised.
Yeah.
I think it would make me worse, mate.
Yeah. No, I agree.
You know what I mean? I think it would make me worse, but I was very fortunate that until I finished, I could score goals.
Yeah.
You know, I could score goals, which was because apart from that, that's what people would say. Nothing else you could do.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
Score, that's the hardest thing to do.
That's your job. And that's why I'll always defend centre forward.
Yeah.
Because you could go and play brilliant for 10 games and no score.
Yeah.
And people will turn around and say, oh, he's not playing well, he's not scored a goal.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, but as a team player, you play brilliant.
Yeah.
Whereas you could go and play rubbish for 10 games and score 8 goals. And yeah. People will say, he's in fire.
Yeah, he's on a brilliant run. Yeah, it's true.
So that's the position it was. Aye, here's a question, Marv. I can't remember my first ever professional game, as in for the first team, the Rangers. Mm-hmm. Can you remember yours?
Yeah, I can. Away at Tranmere, never forget it. On the coach, I've been in a few squads at this point. Obviously, like I said, I've just gone professional. Been in a few squads at this point, hammering down with rain. Go up into the dressing room. The manager names a squad. I'm not in the squad. He hands a team sheet over to whoever he was given to. Might have been Ed at that point as a coach. He then goes to swap with the other team. About 5-10 minutes later, we get a knock on the door. It's the assistant referee or linesman, as they were called at that point. This squad can't go through. And they're like, well, what's the problem? So you could have five lone players within a squad at this point, but we had six.
Right.
So Eddie's gone to the manager and said, you've got six lone players in it. And he's like, there's a boy called Dominic Shimon who he had from QPR. He's like, is Dominic not signed permanently? This sums the whole thing up. Yep. Dominic's like, no, I'm on loan. So I take somebody out of the squad to then put me on the bench. So that then meant I was like gone from being, you know, one of the two that were in the stand to now being on the bench. And it got to maybe about 65th minute. I said it was chucking down with rain. And it was one of those that I was getting to warm up, so I was delighted, like, oh my God, a professional footballer, seeing my name on the back of the shirt. But I don't want to go on. I'm so nervous. There's nerves you're talking about. I'm thinking, I don't want to go on the pitch.
Uh-huh.
I just want to enjoy this moment when there's fans about. And obviously, probably had about 50 Bournemouth fans there, but the Tranmere fans, I'm like, I just want to enjoy this. And I'll never forget, he said, go and warm up. And it had been like, you know, one of those things every 10 minutes, go and warm up. And then the manager's like, then doing that. And I'm like, him? He's like, no. I'm like, him? He's like, no, you. I'm like, oh, no.
You're barely there.
Yeah, exactly. Put them on. I never forget. Go back down and obviously giving you like the instructions. And to this day, I don't know what he said. In one ear, out the other. Yeah. I'm just thinking, I'm so nervous. I remember just going on like absolutely smashing someone. And after that, I felt all right. I was like, right, I'm okay now. But yeah, that was my first game. Never forget. Just seeing my name on the back of my shirt was unbelievable.
A lot of people have said that, oh, my first game was against such and such. I honestly, to this day, I can't remember. I can remember I think one of the first goals I scored.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the Anglo-Scottish Cup? Do you remember when English teams played Scottish teams?
No, I didn't know that.
No. You had teams like Spurs would maybe play Motherwell.
Yeah.
You know, they had big teams coming up and Scottish teams would play Anglo-Scottish Cup. They changed the name a couple of times. But my first memory with the Anglo-Scottish Cup, we played Chesterfield at Ibrox and I got my start. And I think that was one of my first goals.
Yeah.
Right. I could be wrong. Somebody might correct me here. But the team, my first game against, I couldn't tell you. And I couldn't tell you my last game. But I always remember my first Old Firm.
Yeah.
Because as I go back to the story, I always thought I might play in a Rangers-Celtic game. And those days, Rangers played Celtic at Celtic Park. Celtic played Rangers at Ibrox. Same day, same kickoff.
Well, like the reserves?
Yeah.
Right.
Same day, same kickoff. So you would play at 3 o'clock at Ibrox.
Yeah.
And the first team would play 3 o'clock at Celtic Park.
Wow.
Right. So what you would find, Marv, is because the sort of the size of these clubs.
Yeah.
People couldn't get into the Celtic Park, so they come and watch the reserves.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've played in front of 25,000-30,000.
In a reserve game?
In a reserve game. The first team boys would come in, go up the stair, have a bit of lunch, 12 o'clock and all that. But we'd get in at 1. So you get through and you go and get your boots just to make sure your boots were okay. So I was number 23, never forget my squad, number 23. I think it was the same thing as Beckham went through, you know. I think he copied me.
You. Nah.
So I went through to get my boots because I was thinking, right, get my, those days you would change your studs.
Yeah, yeah.
On the big studs, wee studs.
Yeah, yeah.
Big at the back, wee the
Yeah,
front,
yeah, the old rugbys, yeah. So you knew about it when the rugby studs.
And you're playing Celtic, so you had to. Yeah. So you knew it was happening. And I went through to get my boots. And my boots weren't in my peg. I'm thinking, somebody's taken my boots. So I went through and Joe Mason was a coach at the time. And I says, Joe, I says, I've got a problem here. I says, somebody's taken my boots. He says, your boots are in the hamper. You're going with the first team. Now, Now, you think about this. This is Celtic or Celtic.
But, yeah.
And I went, what? And I'm only, I've just turned 18. And he says, you're going with the first team. And I was so excited. So I'm thinking, right, I'm going to, like you, sit on the bench.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't care. I want the experience. I want on the team bus. I want that experience and everything. So excited. Gets on the bus, drives down towards Celtic Park. Next minute, the escort comes with the police. Right, you're sitting there, you're so excited. And the funniest moment I've ever seen in my life, right? Could you forget? So the bus draws up at Celtic Park, and you know what, like, Celtic fans are all around it, right? And most of my pals that I grew up with are all Celtic supporters. So they don't expect to see me.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So I walks off the bus, and they're all standing, and they shout, Gordon, Gordon. So I goes over to talk to them. Yeah, I've never experienced that. Mate, I'll never forget this. See, the cameras had been there, Sky. I'm telling you, they've been the most talking thing I've ever seen, talking point I've ever seen. And Sandy Jardine just grabbed me with the scruff in the neck. And he just went, you don't talk to them the day. and he marched me right into the dressing room, right? And I'll never forget it. So I'm in the dressing room. You know what like is, you're excited.
Yeah.
And big Derek Johnston, Sandy's there, David Cooper's and all these boys. And I'm sitting there and I'm looking, I'm thinking, right, I wonder if he'll let me sit in the bench behind the subs so that
you can take
people,
it in.
People can see me in that, right? You know what like is. Anyway, as it's unfolding, I'm still sitting there and I'm dead excited. So the boys start to get ready. And Cook come out to me and says, what are you doing? He says, what, do you want your boots?
You know something, yeah. Right, tea what, or what, something, what, yeah.
He went, you're playing. I went, what? He went, you're number 10. I was like, no way. Right? I'm going, no. Right? And he went, get your gear, come on, hurry up. So I've kept my gear up, mate, by this time, right? This is true as I'm sitting here. So you hear the buzzer going, that means you've got 5 minutes to get to the tunnel. The buzzer goes and we're all there and you've got your rubs, you've got everything, you've got everything. And the players are lining up to go. I'm in the toilet, mate.
Oh, I'm not surprised, man.
Right? I am ill. Right? I'm ill. And I remember Tommy Craig, who was a physio, come in and went, come on, hurry up, you need to get to the thing. I turned around and went, can they not start with me? I was that ill, mate. Right? I'm thinking, I'm never going to be able to.
Yeah, this can't happen.
I'll never be able to run here.
Yeah.
So as you get nearer the tunnel, see until you experience this. There must have been about 80,000 on the ground at this time, that place. Now, at that time, it's you've got the Celtic end, and it was a thing called the Jungle.
Right.
You ever heard of that?
No.
It was Celtic, were famous. It was called the Jungle. And, oh, it was stout.
Yeah.
Absolutely stout. And then this big end, it was old stadium, right? That was the Rangers end.
Right.
So there was thousands of Rangers supporters in. Then you had the Jungle and the Celtic end. Right, and then obviously the main stand. And the noise walking out was, I'll never forget, it was deafening.
Unbelievable.
Right?
Man.
It was deafening. And I was really panicking. And I remember looking and the place is rocking, right? It's rocking. And I'm 18. I've still got acne. So I've ran out of Coop and you could hardly talk. You could hardly talk. And I'm screaming at him. And he's just standing there with a ball chewing a bit of chewing gum, right? Like it's
nothing. Kick around the office,
right? Yeah. So I turned around and what am I going to do? What am I going to do? Best bit of advice I ever heard in my life. No, he says to me, he went, just run, I'll find you. I thought, that'll do me lovely. That'll do me lovely. I'm good at running. Right, I'm good at running. And I played up front with big Derek Johnston at the time. 5 minutes into the game, scored.
Wow.
Mate, it was the greatest feeling I've ever had in my life. The fact that as a young player, a young boy growing up, you thought, connected to Rangers, biggest game Celtic.
Yeah.
Nice and on the cake scoring.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And after 5 minutes, I scored my first Old Firm game. and our, and I didn't know what to do. Know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I scored the Celtic in. And then I remember I set up a couple. It was three each. What a game it was. Murdo McLeod scored a magnificent goal to make it three each. We went in 3-2, up at half-time, three each. And I remember running out of the jungle, and it was the biggest mistake I've ever, the biggest mistake I've ever made in my life. Next minute, they're pulling me back again. Everything was coming flying. And I remember sitting on the team bus, and I thought to myself, that feels like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know the adrenaline? I couldn't sleep for about 2 days.
I'm not surprised. What did it feel like when the ball hit the net? Like,
unbelievable. A lot of people ask me, the best goal you ever scored must have been, the feeling was Raith Rovers when we beat Celtic Cup final, Coca-Cola Cup final, 94 at Ibrox, because Hampden was getting revamped. But I think because you're connected to Rangers, and then they'll tell you with Celtic, you want to score against Rangers. Because the atmosphere and the game and what it meant and the noise. It was the one thing I always think back to was walking out that tunnel, and the noise was unreal, mate.
Yeah,
was unreal. And I thought, that's 5 minutes ago, and I was back shirt and on the team bus. And I was sitting basically going back to Ibrox saying, did I just imagine all that?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? And as I say, I was 18, and the highlight of that weekend was, that was a Saturday, and the Sunday the game would be on telly.
Right.
Scott Sport, it was called, right? And they would show the game, and I had a girlfriend at the time, we went to Hamilton Pictures, and as I got out of my car, this is brilliant, I got out of my car, and a couple of the Celtic supporters had seen me.
Yeah.
So obviously you're thinking, oh, I'm getting recognised now.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, you're getting all excited. Shoulders back away in the picture. I've got probably another one for the way things are going for me. I better get another couple of arms here. Because into the pictures, and I'll never forget it, and the Celtic boys are giving me a wee bit of loudy. And it was brilliant, good pattern. So I comes back, and it was raining. It was pouring down. I was running back. In those days, every football player had a sheepskin jacket.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember the old sheepskin jacket, right? Everybody, you had to have a sheepskin jacket or you weren't a football player. And I'd left mine in the back of my car. So as I got to the car, I'm looking, I went, there's something wrong here. May I never move, right? And it's peeing down the rain. And I'm looking, and my door's open. I'm going, somebody's broken into my car. But I've looked in, and my jacket's still there, and I'm thinking, oh, they couldn't have broken in my car. They'd have stole my jacket, right? And I'm looking, next minute I look, they stole my sunroof. The front of my motor was shocking. You could see my girlfriend looking. I'm not getting in there. They come back when they see me getting in the pictures, broke into my car,
took the sunroof off,
and it was. I'm no kidding, you're right. Oh. So I still Hamilton, the mother will he go.
Oh man.
I've no sunroof and I've nothing there. I've now got to use my sheepskin jacket to put in the front seat so she can sit down. My is now soaking. I'm soaking. The rain's come bucking. And by the way, I'm driving there, mate. The windscreen wipers are going. And then I had to get home and get bags and all that and sellotape the thing to the next day to get a sunroof.
Brilliant.
And I thought to myself, what a weekend that is. I've scored in my first Rangers Celtic game and they've stole my sunroof.
Oh,
I was soaking by the time I got home. But that was, in these days, that's just, when I look back at that, I thought that was brilliant. They could have stole my jacket.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, or a car.
They must have thought, right, it's peeing down. Oh, he'll no score against us again. If you get in similar to what sticks out in your?
Well, no one nicked my sunroof. That's for sure. I was all right with
you
that.
You probably didn't have a sunroof.
Exactly. Couldn't afford that. What about a sunroof was cheaper? Yeah, I spoke about my debut. I think that's probably, that's a massive, massive moment just because of having the, you know, name on the back of the shirt and being able to show like your parents and your brothers.
What number
and everything
were you?
16. By that point, 16. I was 16. Yeah, yeah. First squad number was 16. So I kept that for a little while. And then, yeah, I went down to number six as I, you know, established myself a little bit more.
Did you get 16 or did you ask for 16?
Just given it.
I just
given it. Yeah, yeah. At that point, I was happy to have any number. You know, Bournemouth, I was signing after having cramp in two trial games. Yeah. Give me whatever you want. So I kind of kept that. But then probably the Scottish Cup, for different reasons. Winning that was brilliant. Obviously, a disappointment at first of not playing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, probably wanting to beat Alan Stubbs up. What did he name the team?
Why? What was it?
So I had I played every single round up till then, and then we played Falkirk in the playoffs, and we had Dylan McGeoch at the time. So me and Dylan were kind of in and out. Dylan had quite a few injuries at this point, and we played Falkirk, and Dylan came off injured before the cup final. So leading up into the cup final, Dylan hadn't trained, so it looked like I was going to play in the game. I think Dylan maybe trained a day before the cup final. Which is fine. Listen, Dylan was a fantastic player. Very, very different to me in terms of what he brought to the team and what I brought to the team. But nevertheless, a great, great player and a great guy as well. So when the team was named, I thought the manager would have given me a heads up because I saw him pull Dylan at the hotel. So when he pulled Dylan, didn't pull me, I was thinking, right, maybe saying to Dylan, give me half an hour if you can.
Yeah.
Or bring you on whatever else. So when the team's actually got named and the manager's obviously did the team talk and the manager names the team, I go from probably being like really, really calm, like a 2 out of 10, just, you know, building up to a 10 out of 10 before you go out, to 100 out of 10 when you name a team and I wasn't in it. I was just thinking, oh no.
This is, shop?
Yeah, I was on a bench, yeah. Oh. But I was just like, nah, my head had completely gone. And I remember having to get myself up, get myself to the toilet, sat down for a minute or so, came back out, I was like, right, it's not about you today. Let's just hope we can win this, body, body, body. I knew what it meant to the fans and everyone else, you know, since coming up into Scotland. So, yeah, like, obviously winning that, Dave Gray scoring at the end and all the scenes after on the pitch. And then, you know, the next 2 or 3 days after that as well were just, for me, was brilliant. You know, having the parade and listen, there's a picture that probably everyone's
seen.
But
did you still feel a wee bit? See,
that was gone for me. Because for me, you know, when I signed for Hibs at 29, that was after Leighton Orient, so I was willing to just stop. It had been such a bad time. They'd thrown loads of money at it. It was everything that I didn't want to be a footballer for happened at that football club. I had like 5 or 6 managers in the season. Yeah. I was ready to stop. So Hibs was kind of a lifeline for me. So I had to remember that when I went to, I was like, listen, remember where you were a year ago and how you were feeling. Now you're part of a club that could go on to achieve something that the club haven't achieved for over 100 years. So it wasn't one of those, maybe earlier in my career, I'd have been like, I've not played, I'm still raging. Yeah. But at that point, I wasn't. When that ball hit the back and that, I didn't care who was playing, I didn't care if I wasn't in the squad. It was just, it was unbelievable. And the final whistle goes and, you know, you see people, one of my mates, Toby, I'm still friends with to this day, him on the pitch with his son. So it meant so much more than just one individual. Yeah, yeah. Do you know what I mean? I kind of got myself away from that. And like I said, the next kind of 3 days and the parade, because as I said, when I signed up in Scotland, people are like, oh, you're just Sunday league, you're just wasting your career. Why are you going there? Mm. This, that, and the other. And then all of a sudden, you know, I'm in the centre of Edinburgh with like hundred thousand people plus behind me taking a selfie thinking, flipping hell, like this time last year I was at Leighton Orient.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's put things in perspective. So for me, yeah, I think on a personal note, in terms of actually something that I've been fully involved in, was making my debut. But in terms of being part of a team, it would have to be the Scottish Cup. That, or when I was at Bournemouth, we had a minus 21, being part of that dressing room and managed to survive.
Minus 21.
Because we went into administration, I think, 2 years in a row. So I think it was minus 15 the first time, then it was like minus 21 the second time. And that would have taken us out of the Football League. So there's a huge pressure on, you know, people around to keep their jobs. You know, if you got the Football League, it was so difficult. Mm. Back then, there's one team up. You know, one team up automatically, and I think the playoff system might not even have been there. It's really difficult to get out of the National League. So, you know, to survive that and be in that dressing room with those players and have that bond and, you know, turn that around was absolutely fantastic. So, yeah, that and the Scottish Cup final. The Scottish Cup final was actually winning something. The minus 21 was keeping people in their job, which, you know, the more I look at it, probably that's probably more important because people have mortgages to pay. But yeah, those two things for me were massive.
Look, I remember a great League Cup final one for me. You talk about disappointment. We were playing Celtic League Cup final at Hampden, and I'd played on the Saturday. And the Tuesday, Greggy pulled me in the office and says, right, look, when you get your head round this, you're up front with Big Derek. And Saturday in the cup final. And I'd never played in a cup final against Celtic. I played in a cup final against Dundee United, and I played in two Scottish Cup against Aberdeen, I think it was sub or something like that, and one of them started the other one. So to play against Celtic, it's at Hampden League Cup final, and I'm thinking, brilliant. So we go down, in those days we used to go down to Troon, the Marine, Marine Hotel in Troon. So we're sitting there, we've trained, everything, Thursday night comes, we're sitting at dinner, and the door opens, and Gordon Smith, right, walks in. Now, Gordon had left Rangers to go to Brighton. And Smudger was a great player. Him and Derek up front were brilliant. So Smudger came in. So I'm sitting there, and you're watching, and going on, and sits down, and all of a sudden you find out he's up Moan. So Greg is basically wee bit under pressure. He's went for Smudger and brought him in and loaned for Brighton for the cup final. So I'm doing the maths. And I'm thinking, we've got a good chance of beating Celtic because they're 12 of us.
Glove playing. That's all right, so yeah.
What a front line that is. So I'm thinking, I feel sorry for Derek. So anyway, nothing said.
Yeah.
So Saturday morning, we got up, we have our breakfast, pre-match meal, and Tom McLean, I'm sure, was assistant manager at that time. I'm great. So Tommy comes in and says, Gaffer wants a word. And I thought, all right, here we go.
Yeah.
Right.
Making me captain.
I don't want to lead the team. Hold on, Adam. But in my head was, look, I'm still young.
Yeah.
To even go on the bench, brilliant, great. Yeah. Cup final. I can come on, make myself out a hero. And that's what I used to tell players when I became a manager. Mm-hmm. Subdure, probably the most important. You can come on and change game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You can come on and be the hero. So I thought, in my head, right, fine, I can understand it. Smudger and Derek were brilliant together. Experience, I'm young. I just need to accept it. I'll never forget it. And soon the team bus is outside and everything waiting to take us up to Hampden. My family's on their way to Hampden. And Greg, he says, look, under a wee bit of pressure, he says, you obviously, you know, a bit. I says, I understand that, Calf. He says, well, he says, I want you to do me a favour. And I'm saying, don't worry, Gaffer. I'll be happy to go on a bet. I'll come on and win the game for you. Don't worry about it. Just put me on any time you want. He says, there are the keys in my car. Go and drive up to Ibrox and play the reserve. Mate, I was like in a balloon. I ended up on the beach in Troon. And I'm looking, I'm thinking, 2 minutes ago, I was a star. Now I'm playing in the reserves. Right, as he's through it. So he gives me the keys of his car. And he's got this big BMW. And I'm thinking to myself, I'm new heading up. I'm no kidding you, and I don't know how he's got, because I was pulling that handbrake.
Really, I'm sorry, sorry.
Go on, I wonder if I put my... So I ends up up at Ibrox, and wee Joe was the reserve team coach, and he pulled me in, and he went, can't believe this has happened to you. I said, well, you're not the only one. And in those days, we didn't have mobile phones.
So
my family's at Hampden.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Thinking, where the hell are you?
Exactly. Right. Jeez. So I'm now in a situation that I'm playing in the reserves. And my head has burst.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm thinking to myself, I think I'm going to be a Celtic supporter in the next 10 minutes. But no, and then what happened was we lost the cup final. The thing backfired.
Yeah.
And lost 2-1. I think we won the reserve game, and I think I scored a couple or something.
Yeah.
I either scored 2 or 3. I don't know what it was. Anyway, on the Monday, the press had got word of it.
Yeah.
And Greg had phoned me and said, look, just keep this, then out. We'll sort it out. I had to make big decisions. Fine. So the press phoned me, and I just
told him.
Mate, I just...
Under the same, man. Oh. It'd have gone arms and legs.
Oh, and honestly, next day I walks into training. And then I remember he talking on. He wants to see me. I went up the marble stairs like that. He made me come in morning, afternoon.
Really?
Morning, afternoon. Ran me around the track, everything. Because I'd went back. And see, looking back now, you only thought yourself, didn't you?
Yeah.
And as a manager, I've went into management. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you make decisions and you go, right, they work for you, don't work for you. And I looked at that as a young player. You should have just accepted it. But it was so hard to take the fact that it wasn't the fact that no starting.
Yeah.
It was the fact that I found myself, my family's there.
Yeah.
I'm not even in. See, even if you'd have said to me, just come with me in the team bus.
Yeah. And be out of the squad or whatever it might be.
Out of the squad and sit in the stand.
Yeah.
But he sent me up with the stairs. Wait, I'm not kidding you, man. I don't know how his motor started.
I bet you were delighted when the press called. Oh, man, I'd have been delighted. Hello?
he must have been jumping that motor and driving home going, what's the smell in this motor? that's the highs and lows of football.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Fans don't see that, do they? They don't understand that. I know, obviously, they have the highs and lows of being a supporter, but when you're actually out there as a player and the pressure's on you, and especially if you care about the club you're playing for, you care about your profession, and it's not going right for you, sometimes fans just think, oh, they see you walking around during the week, like, he doesn't care. You do care. You take it home with you. You can't sleep.
I remember at Rangers, I went, played Aberdeen at Ibrox, first team. Following week, I was subbed with the first team. The following week, I was in the reserves. The following week, I was sub with the reserves, and the following week, I wasn't even in the squad. In 5 weeks.
Wait, 5 weeks, huh?
I went for the there. it's incredible. You're thinking, I don't remember.
What's going on there?
5 weeks ago, I was playing against McLeish and Miller. You know, I can't even get in the reserves against Alaba.
Nice serving a tribute to your family when they come in on the Saturday.
I'd phone everybody and go, I'm injured. But the highs and lows of the game were incredible. Yeah. But it's all about experience. It's all about, and I was fortunate when I was at Rangers. I was involved in three cup final.
Yeah.
And that's what you want. You want to go.
Yeah, of course you do.
But I've got to say, right, one of the worst places I hated playing was Hampden.
Really?
I didn't like Hampden, mate. I missed the biggest chance in the world at Hampden. This is hard to think now. Back to then, they were a good team at this time.
Yeah.
We played, was it the Scottish Cup or the League Cup? We played four in the semi-final.
Yeah.
Four. Think of that now.
Yeah.
Right? And I remember it went to a replay. In those days, it went to a replay. Forfar took Rangers to a replay. And I missed a header I tell you what, must have been about 4 yards. Hit it off the bar. And I get trapped in it. I see me had that sort of a play drop. Talking about goals there and memories and everything, I scored a lot of goals, obviously. Not unlike yourself, as I dodge them in the middle of the park. But you must have a favourite. You must have one that stands out. What would your best goal be?
I've only got 10 or 11 to pick from, haven't I?
Is that where you score throughout your career?
Yeah.
So you're certainly a certain midfield player.
Yeah, holding midfield. I see box to box. Still couldn't shoot, though.
No wonder you didn't make it as a centre forward.
Tynecastle scoring for Livingston. Oh. Obviously, with my Hibs connections, going to Tynecastle as a Livingston player, getting... I really enjoyed the atmosphere at Tynecastle, by the way, because it's so close. The fans are on top of you. You know, getting dogs abuse, and I think it was a long throw that came into a box and somebody flicks it on. I think I come off bearer. And to this day, how I did it, it's kind of acrobatic, but at this point, my back was shot. So I don't know how I managed it. To be fair, anyone else but Hearts probably wouldn't even have tried to do it, because I was thinking to myself, if I land, I'm in big trouble here. But I just remember getting connection on it, and it was like real clean, even though it was a goal score, real clean connection. You know, before it hits the back of the net, it's going in and it flies in. And then all of a sudden you can hear a pin drop in Tynecastle, and I just run off going, woo! Ric Flair!
What was the score at the time?
I put us 1-0 up. Yeah, they scored quite late on.
You can beat 5-1.
No! I don't care about the result at that point. I need to come off like, David, get me off. I don't care about what happens now. Oh, no, they scored late on to make it 1-1. And I remember obviously scoring that goal and then, you know, you come in and you get a few messages and then I was back on the coach and go on Twitter and Hibs were playing away to St Mirren at that point. Uh-huh. So obviously they're getting the score updates and they hear that I score and they start doing the Marvin Bartley chant that game. So that was like that was brilliant. Like to see that was brilliant. But yeah, scoring at Tynecastle. I only scored 2 goals in Scotland, one there. Mm. I scored a few weeks later.
So listen to you there, coming for England up to Scottish football and going to Hibs. Is that the club you sort of fell in love with type thing? See, it's different for me. I grew up here.
Yeah.
I went into Rangers when I was 14 and obviously I knew Rangers and Scottish football, and that's how I'd sort of got my career, and scoring against Celtic was such a highlight. Is that the way you feel because it's Hibs and the Hearts?
Yeah, just because of the way Hibs were, you know, for me, and in terms of where it came in my career, in terms of relighting a fire within me that I thought was out after Leyton Orient. As I said, I was 29, I was ready to stop, like literally ready to retire, playing non-league and, you know, kick back and see what happens. But coming up there and then, you know, coming to such a big club as well. I didn't realise the size of the club of Hibs. You know, going to the training ground, going to Easter Road, you know, being in and around the fans in Edinburgh was absolutely brilliant before I had my first game, which was away to Dunbarton. Mm-hmm. And I got there and I was like, what the f*** is this stadium?
I get locked in there.
So I was just like, wow. But yeah, like, so Hibs for me, 100% is my Scottish club. And people find that weird when I say that. When I played against Hibs for Livingston, I didn't care. I still want to win a game of football. I want Hibs to win every other game except for when I'm playing against them. I'm now back at Livingston as a coach. I want to beat Hibs every single time we play against them. You know, but yeah, listen, it's definitely the club I support.
How long did it take you to learn Sunshine and Leith? It's got to be... Do you know what? Mate, it must be some feeling. Oh. Look, you get Rangers and Celtic with a massive support.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And the atmosphere and everything. But for a Hibs fan, I remember the first time, where did I see it? Easter Road. And I just stood there and I thought, my, this is something else.
I have no idea, obviously, about it. I didn't know anything about Sunshine and Leith. So it was a home game. I think we would have played Hearts in maybe the Cup the first time I heard it. I think we drew with Hearts, I think, at Tynecastle. We took them back to Easter Road and then, you know, we beat them to go through. And I think it was the first time I heard it. And I was kind of like, Wow.
Yeah.
Like, what is this? And the flags are up and people are singing. And yeah, in terms of football anthems, and it's so funny because obviously all my mates and my group chats have seen it. And for me, it's the best song in football. I know everyone who supports different clubs will say their clubs is, but I just think that song is so powerful. When you hear it being sung, there is no prouder moment than being involved with that football club. Mm. And even more so when you're on the pitch as a player that's contributed to that song being sung. Like, for me, it's come on,
has the Proclaimers ever come in the dressing room?
No, I've never met them. I've met the Proclaimers, not in the dressing room. I've met the Proclaimers, yeah. It's such a magical song. Even when you hear them sing it, but I think now Proclaimers are fantastic singers, but I prefer it when I hear the fans sing it. It just means so much. You see like the kids and it's fantastic. Even I went to Easter Road and I was working last season. They beat Hearts and they were up singing.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, absolutely magical. I'm not going to name him, but there was a Hearts man actually recording it. And I'm recording him. Yeah. So I'm not going to name him, but there was a Hearts man recording it.
Okay, what number was he? Pat Shankly. He's lucky he's still there. Right, we got to the end of our careers, which... you never see coming when you start off, do you? Because it is a quick career. Can you remember how you finished, how you decided enough was enough, and who was the last team you played against?
I'm quite strange in terms of, I always said to myself, I want to stop at a certain age, and that was 33. Oh, yeah. Like, literally,
no matter how fit you felt?
No matter how fit I felt. And the thing, my thinking behind it was, could I get to that point without any major injury? And I'd managed to do it. And it was actually during the COVID season that ended up being my last season, and we were playing, we had a cup final, and I'd made a decision, like, David probably doesn't know this, we'll see this. I'd made a decision at that point that if we won the League Cup final, that would have been my last game. and I would have retired on the back of.
Did you want to get a high? Such a high.
I just wanted to. I just felt that was perfect for me. You know, again, I spoke about his relighting a fire for me in terms of coming out of Leyton Orient.
Yeah.
And then towards my end of my career, his, I wasn't playing, and Livingston lit that with me because it was about being the underdog, staying in the division, and then I managed to be captain and get into a League Cup final. So for me, it was like, if you can win this, and 100% as I sit here, that was me. That was me done. And that's probably why I was so emotional after the game, because obviously we'd gone on to lose the game. That and Ailey would message me because she's a massive St. Johnstone fan, and she was absolutely delighted. So that was another reason I was probably crying. But yeah, that would have been my swan song for me to do that. But I ended up, my last game was actually St. Johnstone in terms of the split. And that was my last game playing. And
did you have that in your mind? That was your last game? Or was it the weekend, you go home, you sat down and thought, do you know what?
No, at the start of the season, I knew that was my last season. And I had another year on my contract at Livy as well. And it just so happens, I've been very, very lucky in my football career, not only to make it, but other things that have happened, that I was close to going on a coaching staff with somebody who was going to take a job as well. So that was something else that I looked at. But it was just like, no, that was going to be it for me. That was going to be the end. And it got to the League Cup final. I was happy to stop after that. We lost. So I was like, right, I can play on. But definitely when we got to the end of that season, I wasn't going to play. And even though I was fit enough to still do so, I played, I think I only missed like maybe two or three games that season through injury. So it wasn't like I was like really struggling to do things.
Yeah, so you could have played on.
Yeah, yeah.
Mine was forced upon me in the sense, not forced upon me. What happened to me was I went from Wraith to Ayr United.
Mm-hmm.
And I went as a player, but I put on the contract, I wanted to get into coaching.
Yeah.
Right, because I'd been away and I'd been to the B licence and enjoyed the coach and I liked the different side of it. I wanted to learn it. And Simon Stainrod was the manager at Ayr at the time, mm-hmm. and he brought me in. And Simon was one of the best characters I've ever been in football.
Yeah.
You know, he wore a big hat, so but his ability could back up.
Yeah.
Mate, see when you've seen this guy was sensational. In training, he was absolutely brilliant. And I went in. I'm in the coaching with him. And he says, right, come in as my assistant manager, but player coach. And I remember my first day at trainer, and we're up, and those days it was public parks.
Yeah.
So you'd send the kids up first and they would scoop all the dog's crap out of it, right, so that you could get training on it. And Simon would come up, but he was very, so relaxed, the guy. He was brilliant. Great guy. Anyway, we're doing a shooting exercise and I'm standing there and I'm sort of looking at it, watching, trying to get this education in and watching the exercise, and there's a wee bit of shambles, right?
Yeah.
So next minute, guy comes on, he goes, right, stop. He says, look, two of yous get there wide, you get wide there, you do this, you pull the ball for there, right, we'll start for there. Simon, through the middle, Simon. Shoulders back, right, great finish. So I'm stunned, going, right, this boy's getting organised. Bump, 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 ball comes in. Simon's doing overhead kicks and everything. Mate, what a finisher he was, right? He's up celebrating away, running and all that. Anyway, the thing finishes and we're walking off the training ground, right? I says, by the way, your finishing was brilliant. I know, brilliant, wasn't it, Daz? I went, I says, by the way, you've not introduced me to the coach. He went, what are you talking about? I went, the coach. He went, I have no clue who that is. The boy was walking his dog. He'd watched, this is true, mate. Right, the boy was walking his dog, right? And I think he'd a wee association with an amateur team or something. And he'd seen this coaching thing was going. And Simon just laughed. Right, he was that busy scoring all the goals. And I turned around and I said, what? He went, I haven't a clue who that is. he went, it was a good exercise. And that was my introduction into the coaching.
Yeah.
And then a few months later, unfortunately, the results weren't good and Simon left the club. And I was sitting and the chairman came in and I was blaring away. I never even applied for a job.
Yeah.
Right, because I wasn't ready.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? I'd only been a couple of months into coaching. I was still a player coach. And he come in and I says, how's the applications going? He went, yeah, we've got loads of applications. He says, obviously yourself. I says, no, I've not put an application in. He went, oh, yes, you have. Then I thought to myself.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was ironic that I get the job on a Tuesday night that Raith Rovers were playing Bayern Munich. Remember in the Olympic Stadium were 1-1-0?
Yeah.
They were 1-1-0. Well, if I'd have stayed at Raith, I would have been right over there. But I get the job on the Tuesday night. Remember sitting in the boardroom and I'm looking at TV. So I became player manager.
Yeah.
And I just found that you were...
Not doable, was it?
Man, you would come in at half-time and you were having a go at players.
And you were
exactly. You were absolutely terrible. Right. And then I would go away and my coaching staff would come in and go, you've got cheek. Right. And I decided, I can't remember the last game, but I decided, you know what? I'm going to take myself out of this.
Yeah.
I'm just going to solely concentrate and try to be manager and learn. Because you know people think that you need to be a good player or what kind of player to be a man. Yeah. It's a completely different job.
100%, yeah.
It's like just going into a different world.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I decided then, right, okay, that's my playing career over. So I sort of made that decision on the fact that I wanted to
see
the manager.
Yeah,
I couldn't concentrate in both. I couldn't do both. And then I just went on and I had a few years of management and stuff like that, but it was the right time, right decision for me, so I was happy with that.
Well, go all the way back, obviously you've spoken about our careers and how it ended, going back right to the start. Do you remember the first time you ever kicked a ball?
I could basically walk. You always had a ball. Well, did, didn't we? Because in those days, well, especially in my days, there was nothing like computers and all that social media stuff like that. You got a ball, that's where you go for your Christmas. You went out and you played. But my thing was, and I touched on it about, I lived next to Fir Park.
Yeah.
Basically, you know, a 5-minute walk. So out the back of the flats, there was a bit of grass. So if Celtic or Rangers were playing at Fir Park, I would time it at 3 o'clock. I would go out with my ball and I'd have a wee strip on. And I'd set up a wee goals at the fence. And I would listen to the crowd at Fir Park singing, and I would do the commentary and score a goal. And then if I heard the roar, if anybody could have videoed me then.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was in a world of my own.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You would maybe hit it against the wall and you would turn and you would hear the fans, there we go. And it's DL. Oh, it's a goal. And then if you heard the roar going up, somebody scored, you were away. Like, you were actually playing.
Yeah, you were out there playing.
You were out there playing in that game. And I always could remember that. And I used to do it at most Saturdays when Motherwell played. Because in those days, Fir Park, no matter who Motherwell played, there was always a big crowd.
Yeah.
And you could hear atmosphere, you could hear the noise, you could hear everything. And you played that game out in your head.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Like you were at Fir Park.
Yeah, yeah.
You were playing there and you thing me to the roars and you would dribble and then next minute you would score and if the roar went up, it was brilliant. They were great memories and I enjoyed them because as a young kid, that's all you had.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No riches, anything that the young kids are privileged to now. So the only thing you could do was get your ball and kick it against the wall and turn and score, even yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
You could go out and play football yourself.
Yeah, of course you could, yeah.
Take him dab, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Dribbling and hitting certain things like the garages, try to hit the top of the garage and stuff like that. Don't get me wrong, the guy that had his car in the garage.
Yeah, was happy.
but
you were enjoying yourself.
You were enjoying yourself. What about yourself?
You know what? I'd probably say I'd have been older than that. I used to hate football. So I used to, the first memory of a ball, I remember I used to pick it up and run off with my brothers because I hated football. And I used to have two older brothers. So I didn't want to play football. I wanted to do other things. I wanted to, whether it was running or play cricket or whatever else. And my mum used to say to them, you have to go and play what Marvin wants to play at least once. Otherwise, you're all staying in. So I used to hate it. Mm. So probably at 8, 9, maybe that's when I started kicking the ball about with them because my older brothers were doing it and one used to play for Crystal Palace. So probably wanted to try and be like him at that point. So yeah, it's probably a little bit older, but yeah, obviously you don't look back, do you, from then? But I wasn't doing like shots and anything like that. I was just slide tackling, mate. Concrete slide tackling, grass slide tackling. That's what I was doing. Sliding into cars.
The big ass shoe bomb.
Exactly. Didn't care. Wipe it down.
Stink to the bed sheets, aren't they? You stink to them different. Yeah.
What was the first game then you went to?
It's incredible how fate comes in your life. I can't remember the first game I played in. and I probably can't remember the last game I played in, but I can remember the first game I ever went to, because my father and a guy called Adam Hawke, his name was my dad's best pal, he was signed with Ayr United.
Right.
And my first game was Ayr United against Motherwell at Somerset Park, and I went on to become the Ayr United manager.
Wow.
That was my, and I always remember it, and it was that busy in the stand that we had to go and sit at the press bit. There was a couple of empty seats and the press right up the very back of Somerset. And I remember, I'll never forget it. I remember going down to that game with my dad and Adam, and I'm sure Adam was involved there at the time. And I always thought to myself, what a great wee stadium this is. And it was absolutely jam-packed.
Yeah.
Atmosphere was great. The football at that time was fast and furious. I remember sitting there and I'm looking about, and little did I know that I'd managed the club for 9 years. So that's how I always remember the first game I ever went to.
Yeah.
Ayr United, Motherwell, Somerset Park. I grew up in Motherwell. I never get the privilege to play with Motherwell. I grew up in Motherwell and I managed Ayr United. So I'll always remember that memory for me.
That's
what about yourself?
I went to watch Reading v Tottenham. So my eldest brother, Mark, he's a Spurs fan. So myself, middle brother Michael, Mark, and then my dad all went to watch Reading. I said at Elm Park, and I think Mick Gooden and Jimmy Quinn might have been the managers then, or they might have still been playing. See, Tommy Burns had managed at Reading as well.
That's right, Tommy,
Yeah. So yeah, it was going to watch them. Did really, obviously, being from Reading, I wanted Reading to win the game. Mm. Also, my brother supported Spurs, so I didn't want them to win, with it being a friendly. But yeah, that was kind of my first introduction into going to watch a game. But I was really, really young at that point. I wasn't interested in really going to football. I just wanted to be with my older brothers. And obviously, my dad just walking around like I was some boy. But yeah, that was my first game, watching Reading v Spurs.
After that game, I get the bug to go and watch a game. And what you would do on a Saturday, and it shows you the difference, careers, what you do on a Saturday as a young boy, you would go up to Fir Park and the queues would be right down the street.
Yeah.
And you would go up and ask every guy for a lift over.
Yeah, right? Just got over
did
the wall.
Did you ever do that? No, but they would take you the turnstile and they would just lift over and then you'd be away. And it was brilliant because everybody would give you a lift over.
Yeah.
And you were only a kid. And that's how you get into the games as a kid. And the queues would be back down. And sometimes the games would be 10 minutes in and there'd still be queues
trying up.
Try it again, because it was just all turnstiles at the time.
Yeah.
And then you would try and go up the front and you would just stand there with the wee shot. Mister, can I get a lift in? Can I go? Oh, come here, son.
Straight in you go.
That was it. Oh, I loved it. I loved the leftovers, I've got to say. And I used to do it every time Motherwell played, and then I would go to... See, people say to me that, you're not a Motherwell supporter. You're not a Motherwell supporter. I never missed a Motherwell away game against Rangers at Ibrox, mate. So I can't understand why they wouldn't say that.
I didn't remember that yet. Then it dropped, I was like, okay.
Exactly. I was at every Motherwell away game.
Yeah, at Ibrox.
I was like, hang on.
Some great stories. Brilliant going through, obviously, both careers. Probably do this at the same time next week again, Daz.
I look forward to it. I really enjoyed my wee afternoon. It shows you the difference in the age groups and how football was back then to, you know, the modern day stuff now. So
more stories about Miss Manchester.
Yeah,
would be great.
A bit more sweat in your T-shirt.
Under my arms as well.
See you next week, mate.